John Paul Morosi, national baseball writer for Fox Sports, joins Stephen Brunt and myself in the Jeff Blair Show. Hello, Mr. Morosi.
Good morning to both of you. I'm sorry that I won't be visiting your great city here for baseball, but it was a great run by the Jays.
It was, wasn't it? It was a great run, and you know, we'll know more. We may know a little more at some point these next couple of days, at least some of the plans going forward. But John, I did want to ask you before we talk about Game Six. I did want to ask you about your thoughts on this team as we look ahead to 2016. What needs to be done? What needs to be done if you're the Toronto Blue Jays?
I think starting pitching. I think that is the number one thing, because obviously that's 60% of their season-ending rotation that's now gone or could potentially be gone via free agency with Price, Estrada, and Burley. So that to me is job one. I think the everyday lineup, I think obviously the core of that team is coming back. I mean, most of the key offensive contributors will be back from that standpoint, assuming the payroll does not necessitate any sort of other moves, which I think based on the attendance we saw in the second half and in the playoffs, I don't think that's a concern. So I think the offense is going to be there, and the bullpen will probably need some augmenting as well. But I think the rotation has got to be the key question. And obviously, Stroman, what he did, it was phenomenal for them to at least get him back on the mound, and he obviously did more than that with how he pitched in the playoffs. So there's a lot to like about what he can bring going forward. But I think they need to probably, if they don't re-sign the guys they're losing through free agency, they have to probably add at least two starting pitchers and maybe even three, depending on how they feel about Aaron Sanchez. So, personally, guys, I know it's going to be a big question. What do you do with Sanchez? Do you move him back in the rotation? And that really is, to me, one of the absolute key decisions they face right now, because they've got to figure out what their shopping list really consists of, because that decision has to be made before they make any other call. And I know there's been some sentiment in the organization that he can start, but guys, I would tell you, he's a very good relief pitcher in that role. And my instinct would be to keep him right where he's at, keep him where he's comfortable, keep him where he's had success in the major leagues, because as a starter, he hasn't been quite as effective. So I would say keep Sanchez in the bullpen and then really be aggressive in terms of looking for the starting pitcher.
Although I guess the one thing I would say, John, is that he was starting to settle into that starting role pretty effectively until he got hurt, right? And that necessitated, when they brought him back, they threw him in the bullpen because they needed him. But if you're the GM, and again, we're absolutely flying blind in terms of what the payroll number is going to be, how much money they have to spend. But would you exercise your $12 million option on R.A. Dickey?
I think you have to, Stephen. I do, and I think it's as much to do with the way the rest of the rotation looks as anything else. I think that at least with Dickey, and I think with starting pitching in general, guys, you see so much nowadays when you bring in and you evaluate a starting pitcher, whether it's a trade or free agency, there are so many things that go into it. And health and the way that your medical staff manages that person is a key part of that. And I think if you're going to talk about adding maybe two and potentially three new starting pitchers, that you're going to have to get to know their routines, know their physicality, know their mental makeup. You bring in all these guys from the outside, that I think that just having those innings, that usually reliable 200 innings from R.A. Dickey, that's to me worth $12 million. I know that sounds, it's not my money, obviously, and I know that sounds a little silly maybe to put it that way, but I know what I'm going to get from R.A. Dickey. It's not elite all-star performance, I get it, but he's, as time has gone on, he's figured out ways, I think, to have success in the American League in that ballpark. And my training staff knows him. My clubhouse knows him. To me, to not bring back Dickey would be inviting all kinds of new chaos to that starting rotation that I would rather not have to deal with. So I would take those innings and then figure out what I've got to do with the rest of the group, because acknowledging that I'm going to have to really, when you think about it, I think you would say if you let Dickey go, then that's 75% of your postseason rotation gone. Mm. So I just that to me is way too much. I would take that reliability, and I really think, and I was just thinking about it this morning, guys, I mean, Marco Estrada made himself an absolutely integral member of this organization, this ball club this year, and I think with him as a free agent, that's a huge, I think, sort of underrated, you know, nationally here in the States conversation is what he meant to that team. And obviously we saw a glimpse of it, certainly, and maybe more people realized it during the playoffs. But this guy was absolutely essential to the Jays, and I think he's going to be a huge decision for them going forward. I think he's really kind of found himself in the American League, in the American League East. As the season went along, he got better. And, boy, I just think he is a tremendously important guy to try to bring back, knowing, of course, he's going to be cheaper than David Price. But if it's me, I think he is a huge guy to bring back.
Do you give him a qualifying offer, John?
You know, I might. That's a great question, Stephen, and I probably would. I probably would because, again, that performance that he gave, I know maybe it's out of step a little bit with what he has done in the past, but I would, you know, that $14, $15 million, I would definitely consider that. Listen, 180 pretty quality innings. I know the advanced metrics will tell you, you know, if you look at his fielding independent pitching, that was a little higher. That's maybe a bit of a concern. But to me, you know, he figured out how to manage innings in that ballpark. I think he was to a certain extent very much reliant on the very good defense the Jays played behind him. But again, if you're bringing back that same defense, you know, to me, and you're bringing back the catcher and Russell Martin, or rather, I guess the question will be DeAndre Navarro. But I think he has to figure that out a little bit. But I think overall, enough of the circumstances are the same for Estrada that I think you would want to bring him back. And I would also add, Stephen, that still in the brief lifetime of this new qualifying offer, not a single player has accepted it because nobody's agent in baseball tells them on November 10th, you know what? 1 year is the best I can do for you. That's not something that usually agents like to tell their free agents, so I would still say even if the Jays offered it to him, there's a pretty good likelihood that he's going to turn it down.
John, I want to look back at Game 6. Obviously, a lot of talking points. Our friend Tom Verducci did a terrific article on SI.com talking about how the Kansas City Royals really broke down the Blue Jays in terms of scouting. You know, so much so that they knew when David Price was going to throw his change up by the extra breath he took. They realized he doesn't throw over to first base to begin with, but they saw why, and it was essentially this thing he was doing with his foot that prevented that. They knew that Jose Bautista, on that ball hit to right field down the right field line would always throw to second base as opposed to throwing to the cutoff man. Or throwing to first base and then trying to get the out at the plate. It's pretty clear they knew the Blue Jays inside and out. But having said all that, there were still opportunities for this team, the Blue Jays, to win that game. And I think at the end of the series, it's their inability to come through with runners in scoring position that is really going to – these guys are going to look back on it and wonder what happened there.
No question, Jeff, and I think that's where you saw, especially in Game 6, the number of opportunities they had, the low batting average they had with runners in scoring position over the course of the series. I don't have it off the top of my head, but I know it was pretty low. that's one thing where they put enough traffic on the bases to certainly win that series and certainly win Game 6. And obviously we're going to talk forever probably about the 2-1 pitch to Revere. I saw Don Cherry talked about it, so I know it's very much a part of the national consciousness on Saturday night. But I think that this is just a matter of maybe not quite executing in those key spots. And again, part of it, too, is crediting the Royals because that's something they do very well. I think that's one thing we see where the Royals had the fewest strikeouts in baseball last year, fewest strikeouts in baseball this year. And what wins in the playoffs, I think putting the ball in play on a certain level, that's the key thing. And I think I would be curious to know, the number of strikeouts that they had there with the men in scoring position. Because that's what really, I think, does you in. It's not always necessarily not getting the hit, but not even putting the ball in play. That's the really tough part. And I think that's going to be the challenge for the Jays to think about going forward is how do they get better? How do they adapt their style to the postseason style of baseball? And I think that's the Cubs went through in the National League where they really struggled to put the ball in play against the Mets staff. You know, there's just two different styles of baseball. There's the way you win in the regular season, and then the way you win in the playoffs, which is different. It's almost a fundamentally different style of game. It's a different sport almost when you get to tournament baseball, so to speak. And I think, and again, those scouting anecdotes that Tom wrote about that you mentioned, Jeff, those are things that you don't often see come into play in the regular season because you don't have, as Tom wrote, basically two scouts sitting on one team for a month. We just don't see that. And in a season of 162 games, you don't see that level of focus on one team for a month. And I think that when you do see it in this instance, and it comes to bear in the number of ways that you mentioned, I think that's one of the key differences of postseason baseball versus the regular season. But again, that's the kind of thing when you talk about the ability to execute pitches, the subtleties of defense and base running. Those are things that the Jays, frankly, didn't have to worry much about when they were winning games 10-5. It's just a different type of baseball.
Well, we saw that too. Not just Ryan Goins letting that first pitch go by when in a clear bunting situation and putting himself in a hole when essentially the Royals were prepared to have him bunt. I mean, everybody in the ballpark thought he was going
to
bunt.
It was a tough pitch to bunt, but he should have been squared up and given himself up there. Yeah,
yeah, and he didn't do that. The pitch, Greg Zahn made a great point about the pitch from Osuna I've got a brain cramp now, but it was the third best pitch. He should have gone at the fastball. It seemed to me that in each game they lost, you could sit down and pinpoint three or four clear instances where they just didn't execute. And you know what? I'm sure the Royals had, there were examples of the Royals doing the same thing, but because they won the series, we don't talk about that.
No question. And I think this is sort of the post-mortem of a baseball postseason series. You saw it.
Yes.
And obviously the Royals, to your point, the Royals were six outs away from having this conversation after the fourth game of the division series against Houston. So, that's what happens, this razor's edge you see in the postseason where things change that quickly. I think that the question that Jays are going to have to really confront themselves with and think about during the wintertime is basically this. Were the failings to execute in those key spots that you mentioned and others during the course of the series, were they a residue of maybe collectively not having a ton of postseason experience and they'll be better executing them next time around? That's one possibility. Or do they look at it and say, you know what, maybe there are some components of our club that are just not that conducive to executing in the playoffs, and we've got to change them. That's going to be the key question, because I think sometimes you see successful teams, and the Royals are one example. I saw somebody mentioned it to me earlier today, even that basically half of their World Series roster is different this year than it was last year. That's amazing and very impressive for them to do that, to change that much. And I think you saw the Braves back in the 90s. They almost always changed a piece or two, and they kept winning every year. That's going to be the tough question for the Jays going into the wintertime, is how many changes do they make? As we talked about, they could certainly bring back their entire lineup and focus on the pitching. Certainly they could do that, but you wonder if would that be the best call? Are there guys that they should maybe bring in that are more postseason type performers? Like we've talked so much about Ben Zobrist in the postseason, how he basically never swings and misses. There's value in that during the regular season for sure, but especially in the playoffs, because the situations that we just talked about with Goins and with Navarro and with Revere, those types of at-bats, they decide your season. So I think that's the tough part for the Jays to sit down and think about. We've already got a really, really good team. Maybe even in some respects a great team for the regular season, but how do we get better for the playoffs? How do we change things to make ourselves a better executing ball club in October? Because those are the types of players, guys, that we've seen from the Giants in recent years, the Royals this year, the Cardinals forever. Those are the players that win at this time of year, and you've got to wonder, do the Jays need more of those types of players? It's a very sort of amorphous and very subjective thing to say, but I think that's one thing that a team has to really think about when they come this close to winning the pennant and don't.
Although, you know, the flip side of that is, John, if the probable American League MVP hits a Texas leaguer and scores two runs, and then they may be in game seven.
Sure.
You know, so the notion, I'm not sure that, I think we overstate the flaws in a situation like this, especially for it's a very good offensive team that got to game six in the ALCS. So small stuff, getting a bunt down, especially when you've got Goins up there, who's probably arguably the best bunter on the team, I would think. I think he is. I don't know what happened there, and I don't know why he's taking that first strike. But one thing I agree is keeping status quo is not always the best way to go, even with a great team. That a little bit of a shakeup is, you know, understanding your flaws, even if they're subtle, you know, even if you had a great year, and making a little bit of a change at least, I think is healthy. I think the history of teams that's, you know, there aren't many dynastic teams around anymore, but we always go back to 92 and 93. A lot of changes between those two. You said, right. As you say, Kansas City certainly tweaked their team after going to Game 7 in the World Series. You probably have to shake things up a little bit. In terms of kind of it being a fundamentally flawed team in some way, I'm not sure that it is. I think it's a really good team.
Very good point. And I certainly don't think it's a flawed team, but I do think there's, and I agree with you, Stephen, about the wisdom in changing pieces as time goes on. Because I think one team, to take the counterexample, that didn't change a thing almost outside of adding Max Scherzer was Washington. And look where it got them.
Yep.
So I think that, you know, baseball, for some reason, guys, maybe it's the 162. Maybe it's the 9 month journey, if you want to call it that, from February through October, where you need to have, I think, some renewal there, or things get stale. And I really think it takes a really unique team to keep that same core and keep everything fresh. And the Royals, you know, while they've made a lot of changes, their core, I think the guys that I would say are the essence of their team, Hosmer, Moustakas, Gordon, Kane, Escobar, they've been the same for a number of years. Mm. And they're a really unique team because of the number of guys they had come up and played together through the minor leagues. And they've got such a, I really would call it like a fraternity, a brotherhood that they have there through that minor league experience that you really can't fake. You can't create that. That's something that was just there because of the way they came up. And I think that's a very unique thing that Kansas City built that, frankly, you know, the Jays don't have, and they can't even try to have. It's not the way their team is built. So that being said, I do think their chemistry this year was certainly better than it was last year. Donaldson was a lot to do with that. Martin as well. So I think that their identity is there. I think that they have a very good, I think, grinding, competitive, emotional identity that I think the guys that are the core of that Jays team, and Bautista, Encarnacion, Martin, Donaldson, I think those guys are should be back next year, and I'm sure will be back next year. But it's just a very interesting decision of how you make different decisions. And again, maybe it's just as simple as next time around they'll be the heartbeat will be a little slower in the big moments, and they'll be able to execute a little bit better. But it's amazing to watch postseason baseball, guys, because you see teams. I go back to the Giants, the way that Gregor Blanco and Marco Scudero and Joe Panic and these guys they had the last few years, none of them you would say are superstars, but they were always there in the big moments. And those are the players that you want to have, certainly at this time of year.